So, I am very delighted that you asked me to give my experiences with Melville Yogi in a chronological sequence. My first contact with him was in London. It was not as person to person, but as mind to mind. I was then in the university college. It was 1924. I hated to become a librarian. I just went into the college, the school library. By chance, I found a classified catalog of the Pittsburgh Carnegie Library by McClelland. It thrilled me. I found it was all arranged by the DC numbers. That gripped me, that converted me. That very day I decided I should like to be a professor. And after that my contact came in 1932. I had published my first book, Five Laws of Library Science, in 1931. Naturally, I sent a copy of it to Melville Yogi. Although I had not known him, he had not known me, we had not even corresponded. As a young aspirant in the profession, I sent it to the boy in the profession. But to my great delight and surprise, it brought a letter from him. That letter was most interesting and, according to me, most characteristic. He had found out a few lines in the book where I had referred to classification. And he wrote to me this pure, simplified spelling.
Saying, you say, you write in your book that the DC has been mangled wherever you went. Let me know the addresses of the libraries. I am going to sue them in a court of law. Then came this sentence, a very good advice to me. I find that you are designing a new scheme of classification. Let me tell you how dangerous it is. I am talking from memory, I am not quoting. It's very dangerous. I have suffered. People will attribute all kinds of motives to you. Apart from that, if anything goes wrong, they will pounce upon you. It may cost your appointment. On the other hand, if you use a scheme which is established, which is used everywhere, which is not yours, if anything goes wrong, you go scot-free. Why do you think of doing another scheme of classification? Well, there was another statement. I know that DC is very American or at best Anglo-Saxon, and I know that I had not provided adequate placings in it for Indian thought and culture. Instead of doing a new scheme, why don't you write out your schedule in classics, Indian literature, Indian thought? I shall incorporate it in DC. Well, this thrilled me very much. But unfortunately, my scheme, to use one of our modern terminologies, was not an enumerative scheme. It was an analytical synthetic scheme. So it was difficult for me to send him a schedule unless I worked out ready-made schedule for all possible Indian literature. That was too much of a task because my hands were then quite full with building up the university library, building up the column classification, building the classified catalog code, building my administrative procedure. Therefore I wrote to him, it's difficult for me to send you a schedule. My book on column classification will be out next year, and if after perusing it, if you think that I can be of any help in collaborating with you, I shall be most happy. Well, next year my book did come out, but unfortunately Dewey died before my book came out. That was one of the saddest experiences in my life. I know when he had devoted so much thought to my five laws, he would have done much more to the column classification. Number one, I would have benefited a good deal in improving it with all his experience. Number two, we would have collaborated so as to enrich both the DC and the CC. Well, that is my second contact. And then comes the third contact. That was, again, because he was dead, That happened in 1948. In that year, I was a member of the faculty of the UNESCO School, UNESCO International School for Public Librarians. And the dean of that faculty was Mr. Kildahl, the inspector of libraries in Norway at that time. I met him first in Oslo, and then I met him in Manchester. When I met him in Oslo, he had not revealed that he was a student of Melville Dewey. But we were thrown together for a month in Manchester. We had to spend a good deal of time together. Then slowly came the information that he was a student of Melville Dewey. Well, we had several talks where he could give some of his reminiscences, and I was extremely glad to get all that information. That was the third contact. The fourth contact was in 1950. I was then in the United States, and the American Library Association had its conference in Cleveland. That was the jubilee year for the classification and cataloging division, and I was put down to give the jubilee address. As a result of it, I was invited to the jubilee dinner, and guest of the evening. At that time, the organizers had been very thoughtful in bringing to that dinner an old lady who was also a student of Melville Dewey. We sat together at the dining table. We had many reminiscences. And one of them is most amusing. That shows the courage and the determination and the enormous power for strategy which Melville Dewey should have had. She said that when Dewey came to the Columbia University, he was insisting that he should have lady assistants. But the Columbia University in those days did not allow ladies to come into the university building, so the authorities would not allow it. But he would not have any other assistants. Then they found a compromise. The lady said that they agreed that the lady assistants of Melville Dewey would be allowed to come into the building, not through the main door, but by the spiral service staircase at the back of the building. Well, that compromise was accepted. After some time, Melville Dewey reported to the authorities that that spiral staircase was missing and his assistants were unable to come into the building. Then they were in a great fix. Are they to put up another spiral case and wait for a week or 10 days without work in the library? Or what are they to do? Well, Melville Dewey, I suppose, did not even smile on that occasion. Probably was very, very serious looking. And they said, all right, I shall allow your lady assistants to come through the main door. That's a very remarkable experience I heard from that old student of Melville Dewey. And then Miss Van said she is here to make a survey of the DC position in the Asian countries. I'm telling her now that the very first gentleman that thought about finding out the needs of the different countries in the adoption of DC was Melville Dewey himself. As my contact with him, which I narrated a few minutes ago, shows, his mind had already wandered into India and into Asia. And if he had lived a little longer, probably he would have already done something which Miss Vaughan is trying to do now. And what is more important, as a result of my correspondence with him, and as a result of the needs of correct educational methods, I had been teaching classification using both CC and DC simultaneously and making a comparative study of them almost in every hour, both in practical hours and and in theory hours. Well, that has disclosed several points where the DC required to be amplified to make it suitable for Asian culture and Asian literature. So I come second in the line, next to Melville Dewey. And then there was the Indian Library Association's conference in 1944 in Jaipur, when some of the friends wanted to work out a schedule for some of the Indian classics for the DC. They did work out something. They asked me whether it was tolerable. I said it was tolerable. And then they said they were going to adopt it. Then I remembered what Melville Dewey had written to me about the library's mangling his scheme. I said, you don't know what you are in for. Although Melville Dewey is no longer living, we don't know what kind of legal successors he has left, and if you begin to mangle it again with your own numbers, you may have to face a court of law. So I advised them to write to Lake Placid Club and then get their permission before they did anything. But I don't know what they did exactly, but I don't think anything has been done, no such scheme has been published so far as I know. What they did, I do not know. So the Indian Library Association was the third in succession. And then came the three representatives of the International Relations Office of the American Library Association, Jack Dalton, and then Swank, and then Ashine, who had been passing through India several times. Well, at least Jack Dalton has done it several times. Ashine has done it once. The Sankey has done it once, I suppose. They should have felt the need for doing something. Now, therefore, it may be a very thin link in the succession. So, the fourth link is always a weak link in my scheme, and so it was a weak link. And then comes the fifth link in the form of Miss Van. And you know, in my scheme, five represents energy, five represents beauty, five represents ladies, and it's a very wonderful coincidence that my mnemonics should work so well. And if my mnemonics mean anything at all, it means a lot for me, as some of my friends know. Her mission is going to be a great success. And this is the fifth in the lineage to adapt DC to Indian conditions. Well, after that, another contact, which I had very recently when I was in Oslo, it was last month that I was there. They had invited me when I was at Elsinore. I went there. Then they had kindly arranged for a lunch in which both Dr. Munthe and Kildall joined us. And we were about 15 or 20 librarians, and we had all kinds of reminiscences ranging from the days of Dewey down to that minute. And in the course of the conversation, I discovered, rather, Kildall told me, whispered into my ears really, he said, look here, Munthe once wrote a memoir on Dewey. He had never published it. Why not you get it out of him? Well, that whisper, I magnified and said that loudly, and I said, Munthe, you ought to give it to me. Then Munthe said, I had left it somewhere, I shall have to search for it. Then I forget the lady who was sitting on my right. I charge her, it is your duty to help that old gentleman somehow to find out that memoir, and the memoir should reach me, and I am going to publish it. And then I turned to Kildall and said, you have prompted me to book Munthe, and I have done it, and you must pay your price for it. He said, what's the price? The price is that you must write out some reminiscences of Melville Dewey so that I can back Munthe's article with this first-hand reminiscence. I am expecting them any moment. The only cause of delay is perhaps in the bargain I have to give them something in return, an article, and I hope to do that. I wanted to do it before I go to Rutgers. Whether I do it now or after I come back, I don't know. But I am sure to get that Munthe's article. You know, Munthe is a very respected man of our profession. He was the president of the IFLA for several years, and a very generous and fine gentleman. and whatever he says, I have got great respect for his words. I am sure he was not a student of Melville Dewey, but he was a great admirer of Melville Dewey, as I am. And I do hope that something very useful will come out of that memoir, which I hope to get.